What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for listening in. Big thanks to Monster Energy Drink. Currently, I am enjoying one of these Muscle Monsters. It's a vanilla-flavored one, which I actually poured coffee into. I don't suggest that you try that at home unless you want to be wired for many hours, but thank you to Monster Energy Drink. Thank you to Quello. If you guys have not visited Quello.com, I suggest you do. I recently watched the Slipknot Disaster Pieces DVD over there. Man, I forgot how sick that DVD is. And there's actually one part, I want to say it's in like Spit It Out, where Mick, who some of you just heard, you know, he was stabbed. Luckily, he was okay. I think he got into a fight with his brother late in the evening a couple days ago, and a drunken fight of some sort, and he was stabbed with something in the back of the head, but he's okay. We're still going on tour. Jeez, I just went off on a tangent there, didn't I? But anyways, there's a point where Mick is like doing the picking and Corey's making everybody sit down and they're about to like jump up and go crazy. And I just remember being on all those shows back then in that time frame. We had done so many, you know, tours with Slipknot, and I just remember how sick that was. And it made me super excited for these shows coming up with Slipknot in April and May. Hopefully some of you got that $13 deal they did this past Friday the 13th. There was $13 tickets for a limited time. But anyways, I'm getting off the point here. I'm talking about Quello.com. It's an awesome site and an app. It's spelled like hello, but with a Q instead of an H. That's right. Quello Concerts has the largest collection of full-length concerts, music, documentaries, and streams on any device. And they have a ton of awesome metal DVDs over there as well, which you can watch when you go and you sign up for a free trial at my link. It's Quello.com/VIP/Jamie Josta. Okay. And when you do get your free trial, check out all these awesome DVDs they have on there. Avenged Sevenfold, Black Label Society, Black Sabbath. They got the big four with Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax. Download Quello Concerts on your mobile app store from Apple, Android, or Windows. They're also available on Apple TV, Roku, PlayStation, Amazon, and Xbox. Don't forget, you got to use my link so that we get some of those proceeds going towards the Josta Show. That helps us with travel, production, all that stuff, booking guests, you know, all the legwork that goes into bringing you a great podcast. For your free trial, go to Quello.com/VIP/Jamie Josta. Okay, so back to Slipknot. You heard that Mick was stabbed. Luckily, he's okay. Thank God. We are going on tour with them, and the dates start at Welcome to Rockville, which is in Jacksonville, Florida. We pick up, I think it's April 26th. That's when we start, and it goes until May 18th. You can also see us on Rock on the Range, Carolina Rebellion. And what else? There's another festival in that tour as well. But we have some off dates. We announced 428 Memphis, Tennessee at the High Tone Cafe. We also have May 1st, Little Rock, Arkansas at the Rev Room. May 5th, Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Rave. And May 14th, Rochester, New York, Montage Music Hall. So those are the Hatebreed off day shows from the Slipknot Tour. Oh, I can't forget Flint, Michigan, the Machine Shop. I am told tickets are selling very well. And speaking of tickets that are selling very well, this Friday, Hatebreed is flying to Denver to do a 20th anniversary show. Now, you know, our last Denver show, we had to cut the set short. There were some issues, but we are coming back to do a full set to make it up for everybody and to celebrate our 20th anniversary, which we're celebrating all year long. So this Friday, March 21st, Castleman's Bar and Venue in Denver. There are tickets still available, but they're selling fast. So go to rockpanther.com. And then Sunday, we're flying to Texas to play South by So What with Atreyu, Suicide Silence, Immure, Upon a Burning Body, Code Orange. I mean, the bill is just stacked. That's southbysowhat.com. And that's the only Hatebreed Texas show of 2015. Okay, folks, because we got to go do a new album this fall. We can't go do another headline tour. We can't go do another support tour. We want to keep the creative process rolling and get this album recorded. I've been writing some kick-ass lyrics and some awesome songs. I think you're going to like them. Speaking of writing lyrics and songs, thank you for all the nice feedback on the track I did called The Immortal, which you can buy. You can get two versions of it for $1 over at jostahq.bandcamp.com. I heard that Matt was not allowed to use the song as his entrance music. That is unfortunate, but that is how the business goes. Hopefully he will, you know, get that worked out and he'll be able to use it as, you know, his entrance song on upcoming fights or whatever. But it's just, you know, sometimes songs get held up with red tape and I don't have the time or the energy to worry about that. But shout out to him and hopefully he'll be able to use it down the line. He can use it, you know, whenever he wants for free. I didn't do the song for money and it's not about money and I really don't, you know, care about that stuff. But if you want to pay the dollar and you want to go to jostahq.bandcamp.com, you'll get both versions of the song for a dollar. It's called The Immortal. And I've been working on this other song. It's really thrashy. I've been working with Charlie Belmore and his brother Nicky, who plays drums in Toxic Holocaust. This song is awesome. I'm going to hopefully have it out in the next 2 weeks or so. So be on the lookout for that. And if you like the idea of me releasing Josta singles, leave me a comment on facebook.com/JostaHQ or tweet me. At Jamie Josta is my Twitter handle, or, you know, Instagram. I've been going on there a little bit more, at Jamie Josta on Instagram. So if you like the idea of me releasing a Josta single every 2 weeks, once a month, twice a month, let me know. And I think this Bandcamp site is pretty cool. And, you know, the PayPal takes a lot. I think PayPal takes like a third of the money. But again, it's not about the money for me. It's just about not having these songs stay on a hard drive. And everybody enjoyed this Immortal song so much. So I'm like, you know what, let me keep pumping some stuff out. As long as the material's recorded and done, there's no reason why it should be sitting. And if you guys like it and you feel it's worth a couple bucks, go to jostahq.bandcamp.com. Now, coming up in just a little bit, I will be speaking to Andrew WK. You want to talk about one of these guys, an amazing performer, awesome frontman, has, you know, had a lot of solo success, has done motivational speaking, has, you know, had songs in all sorts of movies and video games and done world tours and traveled the world. He's going to Japan coming up with Marky Ramone. He'll go on these tours with Marky Ramone and sing Ramone songs. I mean, the guy's very versatile, very inspiring. He's done motivational speaking. He's spoken at Oxford University and Yale University. Just fascinating guy. And he's had a lot of controversy surrounding him as well. Weird rumors, you know, saying that he's not the guy who he was. We're going to address all that coming up in just a bit. But real quick, I want to say thank you to everybody who listened to the Adam D from Killswitch episode. Since him and Jesse have been on the show, everybody's been like, you got to get the rest of the Killswitch guys on and you got to get Howard on. So I'm trying, okay? Believe me. I'm going to link up with Mike D around New England Metal Fest because Josta is playing at New England Metal Fest April 17th. So come to Worcester, Mass. If you are in town or if you're in the New England area, do not miss this show. Death Angel just got added. Cavalier Conspiracy, COC, The Blind Era. So they're going to do all those songs, I think, with Carl singing and you know, off the Blind album. And then you got, like, who else is on there? Code Orange, Overcast, Between the Buried and Me. The bill is stacked. So that's April 17th, and I will get the other Killswitch guys on the podcast around then. And hopefully we'll get Igor Cavalera on the podcast as well. So believe me, I have a lot of plans for the podcast. And right now I only have two Josta shows booked. That brings me to my next point that I have to talk about. Josta has been confirmed on Heavy Montreal. I am friggin' stoked, okay? I don't know why I'm saying friggin', because I can swear. I am fucking stoked. It is August 7th through the 9th. Tickets are on sale now. They just added more bands. Like, it was Slipknot, and I want to say Lamb of God. Now they added Korn, they added Meshuggah, they added Mastodon. I mean, the bill is off the chart. Arch Enemy's on there. It just keeps getting better and better, and I'm really psyched that Josta is going to be able to perform. So right now, those are my two Josta shows this year. April 17th at New England Metal Fest in Worcester, Mass., and then August 7th through 9th, one of those days, Josta will be playing at Heavy Montreal. And hopefully by that point, maybe I'll have like four or five new Josta singles released, and you guys will let me know what you think of them. But anyways, let's get to the show. I'm talking to Andrew WK. Here it is. Hit the music.
Start this, motherfucker!
I I got a minestrone.
Okay, wow. You got an order of coffee beans? This is...
And I have a coffee.
Nice snack. Oh, and an actual coffee, cooked coffee.
Andrew WK on the show. Yeah, it's an Americana. What is your coffee of choice?
Just, yeah, regular American coffee, you know, black coffee. Did you? I saw you used sugar in the raw and a little cream.
I did. A little sugar in the raw, a little cream.
And then some still water.
The soup is very salty, so I dumped about half the water
on. Yeah, the broth looks a bit thin.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I'm not a big fan of salty soup myself.
Who is in your death metal Mount Rushmore?
It was funny. I was going to ask you if you could... I was going to do an impersonation of someone and see if you could get it. It's not going to be a very good impersonation because of where we are.
Yeah.
But who would this be? Cheers.
Cheers, did you say?
Yes. That's one of the people I put up there.
Is it Chris Barnes?
No, but that's close. It was Mark, quote unquote, Barney
Greenway
from Napalm Death.
Are they on your Mount Rushmore of death metal?
Yeah, and if I was had to put any particular... one of the members up there, of course, I don't believe anyone from the very, very original lineup is in the band, but Shane Embry, the bass player, certainly is the longest running member, and then Barney and Mitch Harris. But I really am a big fan of the old drummer Mick Harris from the Harmony Corruption era, which is my favorite album, although I really like Danny, the drummer now, and then, of course, Jesse, the other guitar player, passed away. He was really great. I think now they
Jesse
just have
Pintado. I know, that's so sad.
It was very sad. I think they just have just... Mitch now, right? Just one guitar player?
Yeah, and actually Mitch sat out because he had to fly home to Las Vegas, and I think he's dealing with some stuff with his father.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but I've had Barney on the show.
Oh, fantastic.
And I know that you're, you know, a big death metal connoisseur. You've had actually guys from Obituary in your backing band.
This is true, yeah.
Who's in the band now, and is it anybody with some metal cred, or are you going like straight session people?
Well, it's a lot of the same original folks that were there from the beginning when you and I first met, going back to when we first started around 2000 2001. Donald Tardy, the drummer of Obituary, the Tardy brothers, his brother John is the singer of Obituary. I wrote a letter to Donald in probably around 1999, got his home address through a man named Trevor, who was my manager.
Yep.
Grew up with him in Tampa, Florida. And I remember when I met Trevor, he was sort of matter of fact about the fact that he had his home address, but to me that was like getting the home address to Donald Tardy. I mean, that was the person I would most want to have the home address of. And I wrote him a handwritten letter. I guess that was before I had any kind of email or anything like that. Sent him my early recordings and asked if he would be my drummer, which was an absurd. It was such a ridiculous thing to ask. One, because he's Donald Tardy and he already is in the greatest band that anyone could be in. But also because the music was so different, you know.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where it made no sense, and there was just some compulsion within me that there was nothing to lose, I guess. And also, the one thing that I thought was maybe possible was that Obituary was on an unofficial break at that point. So maybe he would have the time to at least maybe just play on a song or something. I did a lot of things on blind faith at that time in my life, and I think it was destiny, some other force urging me to do it. And I remember one day getting home, and there was a message on my answering machine that said, "Yo, this is DT. I got your demo. Yeah, I'll be in your band." And then he formed my whole band.
What was the reaction like when you got that?
I just thought it was like a prank call. You know, like everyone would assume that it was someone that heard that I had sent that letter and was calling and playing a trick on me. But when I realized it was real, I mean, that was the first real instance that was very like a dream coming true, where it was something I never thought would be possible.
Yeah.
And out of all the things, if someone said, if you could have anything in the world, what would you wish for? That was right up there. I mean, more than anything else I could have thought of at the time.
And you didn't have your deal in place yet.
Just barely. I mean, I had the record deal maybe within 2 months before that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the record label encouraged me to do that. I think having that momentum and that to offer, like we had resources to work with so that he knew it was for real to some degree. I think he called Trevor, who he trusted, and said, "Hey, is this guy for real?" And he liked the music, I think, because it wasn't competing with his genre at all. I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't like he was wanting a change or anything necessarily, but I think sometimes one of the things that I've benefited from is that I don't step on anyone's toes with what they're trying to do. It's totally like we can relate to the excitement and intensity of energetic music, but I don't really compete with a lot of people because it's just a different sound. You know?
I used to have to like constantly try to like explain your success to people. And I would say, especially during that, you know, early 2000s time when
Ozfest and stuff.
Yeah. And I would say it's because it's an island and it exists unto itself. And a lot of successful bands, especially people like with yourself who have longevity in the music business, I think it's because they're not set to a certain scene or a certain genre. Mm. If you can be like indescribable, then you can just kind of exist on your own and you're not, you don't have those limits.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I like to think that that can work. And I don't know exactly how things have happened the way they have happened, but no one is more shocked and grateful than I am, of course, that it has gone this way. And yeah, I mean, there was times when I was very conflicted about not really fitting in. And sometimes that was harder because I, you know, I liked these other things and I wanted to be part of those communities just for my own passion, my own fandom, you know, the things that I liked. But I, you know, I, for whatever reason, I sometimes removed my own taste and my own interest even from what I was pursuing with this sort of like, this is what I was meant to do, whether I liked it or not, you know?
Are you sad that, like, the major label days of, like, the crazy tour support and the crazy, you know, big budgets for the records and stuff is over? Or are you happy because it kind of, like, pushed you to do TV and get endorsements and work with bigger, you know, corporate sponsors and things like that who can kind of pick up the slack?
Well, you and I both got to have the best of both worlds. We got to see the golden age, really the height of it, right? It's so funny that it reached such a pinnacle. The major label system and that version of the entertainment industry really hit this high point right when we were not starting. Well, you know, you had been going for a while, but for me, it was the beginning and I got to see that and I loved it. You know, I was fascinated by it. I never had that kind of, inherent mistrust or animosity towards corporate. I was excited about it. These are experienced people that had amazing resources and had a lot of power and experience.
And you get a pass. Why is it that you get this eternal pass?
It makes no sense.
Like,
I don't know.
You could be like there could be like McDonald's presents Andrew WK and people would be like, yeah, I got my McRib. Why is it like that?
I don't know. I guess just because, maybe just because I never said anything other than, you know, I had what I was interested in was never specifically a political stance or any kind of stance.
It was just partying.
It was just a feeling, you know, it's just a feeling. And I wanted it to be like that for me because I wanted it to be open enough. I wanted it to be a party in the way that when you go to a party and there'd be people there that you would never otherwise hang out with. And you might even think you don't like that guy and I don't like people like that. And then somehow or another, you find yourself all having a great time. And there's something very freeing about that. You know, just maybe going back to high school and feeling at odds with, you know, jocks or at odds with people that were, you know, into this kind of thing. And then what if I could create a space where these people that I don't even like would want to party and we would actually end up liking each other, at least having a common interest in this kind of, again, this excitement. But I don't know. A lot of this I can't explain and I can't take credit for it. You know, I wish I could in a way to say like, yes, it was all very deliberate and I knew it would go like this, but it's really the result of a lot of other people getting into it and believing in it with me. People I've met, people I haven't met. But there's certainly no way I could have ever done this on my own.
But the credit I think that you need to accept for yourself and that you could kind of be a little cocky about is that you never let any negativity invade your space. And I've seen a bunch of your shows, and you don't attract any of it. And I think that's the key. Like when I look at your show, when I look at your live show, you're going out into what could be like on Ozfest. It could be a potentially extremely hostile situation, but nobody there reacted like that. I think mainly because they see you, you're having the time of your life, you're giving out all this energy and they go, I can relate to that. That everybody has that kid inside them that just wants to go crazy and express themselves without having some bum out dude who's not, you know, driven enough to just do it himself, fucking up the show for them.
Well, again, I thank you. But even with that being said, Because I remember those Ozfest shows. That's where you and I met. It was a lot of laughter and festivities in this
restaurant's getting kicking.
This place is getting hyped up. I mean, but I
you bring the party everywhere, dude. Well,
I was frightened at those moments and very overwhelmed and scared. And again, those were good examples of someone that I figured wouldn't like me. I mean, I didn't go into that assuming people would like it.
But did you have any, do you remember any specific instance of getting hit with something or middle fingers?
Yeah, all the time.
Because I don't feel like anybody took that away. Like,
well, maybe you didn't see it, but you know, maybe it kind of turns into a blur because there's other stuff to focus on. I wouldn't respond to it. I felt like, and this goes with sort of the shows in general and the whole phenomena, it's like there's, and this, whether you believe in this kind of thing or not, the only thing I can compare it to, even if it's just symbolic, is like a guardian angel. Like there's some other thing at play. And maybe it's just the music. Maybe it's just this major key cheerful sound. Maybe it's just the nature of it being really spirited and focused on getting cheered up. It's like it creates this force field or this bubble. And if you push against the bubble, instead of it pushing back, it actually like envelops you and like gentles people. Because there's no logical reason that any of this stuff should have gone the way it's gone. Being in hostile environments, why wouldn't it just be hostile? Why would people transform? I didn't make them do it, you know. It's something that I can't really explain, but I've seen it happen, so I can't deny it either.
How much pressure is there, like, if any, from your record company or from your management or from anybody within your inner circle to just put out that next party song, the generic everybody can get into party song? And why haven't you attempted it?
That's a great question, and one I've pondered in many different ways for the last, well, I guess like 6 years now. Well, there's never really been much pressure, fortunately, beyond the pressure I've put on myself. And again, I've been very thankful to the people I work with that they're so open-minded, and really the people I've worked with have encouraged me more than anything to do things I haven't done. Like, why do what you've already done? Let's do something different. Let's add to this thing. Let's put it in another position that it's not been in before. Let's expand it. So I thought of it like a tree. Like, we built we had the roots, I guess, and the ground, and then the trunk starts to grow, and then it just branches off. And you could, like, just keep adding to the trunk, but what if you could sprout, you know, a new branch, and it grows a flower, maybe it has a new fruit, and then a bird builds a small nest there and hatches an egg, you know? Keep adding on to what we built. So I embraced that. But at the same time, no one has wanted to record a new album more than me.
Yeah.
And I've actually had more kind of discussions with my team about, hey, let's record an album. They're like, just be patient. I think we should do that later. And even when I had blocked out time, I mean, this is what's been quite perplexing, because I got very frustrated at times. Like, I want to record an album.
Was it held up like it was shelved? Did you record a whole album that was shelved?
Not technically shelved, because it was released eventually, but there were business complications that, again, I take credit for. I mean, like, no one forced me to sign something that I didn't want to sign. Decisions I made a long time ago that I didn't necessarily think would manifest in the ways that they ended up affecting my freedom. You know, and at the time I was very depressed and angry about it, and you know, as angry as I could ever be about anything. But even now, looking back, if those things hadn't gone the way they had gone, even in the times I thought were bad, then I might not even be sitting here talking to you right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they say everything happens for a reason. It was more than that. It was like, again, there were forces at play that went out. I'd like to think in the past, this is the best way I can say it, I thought I was in control of everything. I would do this, I would do that, make a plan, chart it out, follow it through. But then even going back to that early experience of writing Donald Tardy that letter and having him write it, you realize that the things were so unlikely. Like, he formed my band basically for me. He brought in people. I met my band at our video shoot for Party Hard. We hadn't, like,
wow.
There was so much just trust and let's just go. I wasn't questioning anything. I would just say, okay, do it. And people would say, well, shouldn't you at least meet these guys first? Like, no. It's going to be fine. And thinking about that and how most of this adventure has worked in that way, without any logical planning, you realize that there's some other path. Like, instead of me pushing towards my goals, I'm being pulled unknowingly a lot of the time towards it.
Yeah.
And so even these times of frustration where I wanted to do something that I thought I was supposed to do, I wasn't supposed to do it. For example, like the time I was supposed to, I had cleared out about a month and a half to record, I guess, in 2013. And I was finally ready to do it. I was so excited. It had all opened, like blocked out the space. No, you know, can't take any offers. Just turn everybody away. Can't do anything. No shows, no nothing. And then Black Sabbath called and asked me to be their DJ opening on their North American tour.
Yeah.
So I can't. So yeah. I was like, well, I guess I'm not supposed to record the album now. And that's like versions of that have just kept happening and happening. And I used to get frustrated. But then I would say, like, how could I be frustrated when you're getting to
right.
play it's- with, you know, the greatest people in the world. So
it's a creative outlet, but not maybe the one that you would put first.
It just is what it is. Like, I have turned myself over to the party gods, and I just now feel like I'm meant to do what they want me to do.
But what's, like, most fulfilling that you get paid for? Would it be the column? Would it be music? Would it be TV? Like, what? Like,
I don't get paid for the a lot of the stuff I don't get paid for. It's sort of just, it is what it is. That's an interesting thing, too, because sometimes I've wondered, I have friends that have made a great deal of money and were very focused about finances from the very beginning. And I've had people say, you know, I've made mistakes with that. But it was that money was always a means to do another thing that you wanted to do. It's never like, okay, we're going to make this video so we can make a lot of money by people right. seeing it. It's like, let's make some money so we can make this video that's going to be like an awesome video. Yeah, so there's
but what's the head of the snake for you?
Well, I probably make the most of my money from, you know, like royalties and shows and things like that.
Because it seems like you get such a good amount of syncs. And like, is that
yeah, sure.
is that on just the past catalog? Or do you have someone who's like an animal getting you this stuff? Because I feel like so many bands struggle with syncs. Like on the, and I'm not knocking Razor and Ty, like they did a pretty good job for the last Hatebreed record. But part of our deal was, I said, just go out and you got to get soundtracks. You got to get video games. They got literally nothing. Like the stuff wow. that I got, you know, like we had a song in an ABC show with James Caan.
Oh, nice.
That was through a friend of mine that I knew that was working
yeah, yeah.
on the show.
It was a great show. He's a great actor.
Back to the Game, it was called, right? I think that was the name of the show. But so, but that was, it wasn't like a huge paying sync, but, you know, is that something that you want, that you set out to do? And
well, I always like having the music being used to enhance people's work, you know. My biggest dream was always to have the music at sporting events. So like at a baseball game, at a football game, or on TV at those games, or used in ads, just because I like that epic energy of the competition of sports, you know, yeah. like that dramatic, emotional game. So that's been really exciting. And then movies and previews, you know, those things, I always wanted the music to be in that realm. It's not really music expressing myself or my life. It doesn't feel precious to me in that way. It feels like invincible.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like something that needs to be guarded. So I feel like just the more the better. Instead of me amplifying their stuff, I feel like their stuff's amplifying the song.
So when you first put the first Andrew WK record out, were you sure to keep your publishing or work out an aggressive deal in the beginning so that you could always have residual income from that? Or were you like, you know what, let me sign away my publishing, take an advance, and use that money to, you know, do other projects?
Well, both, I guess, because I signed away. I mean, I've been with Universal Publishing since the beginning, but that's just a portion of it. So in that way, it's good. They have a vested interest, but I still get the majority of it. So
would you suggest that for newer artists? Because there's less and less video games. There's less and less TV shows and movies. The soundtracks are less and less.
I mean, I don't have a real good perspective on how it works in general, but this music was made with the idea of those things in mind. Like, I wanted it to be very commercial, very accessible, very, I don't know, like a strobe light or something.
Yeah.
You know, a strobe light isn't a delicate thing. It's supposed to be this blinding, intense thing, and you use it when you want that effect. So I've just been really excited and honored that people have used it when they're looking for that kind of moment in an ad, in a movie, in a show, in whatever. I mean, to me, again, the high point is when it's used at live sporting events. When people say, hey, I'm at the Yankees game, and they just played I Love New York City, or, you know, it's the fourth quarter in this basketball game and they put on Party Hard or something. That to me is really like the as good as it gets, but I'm thankful for all of it. I would encourage people to, you know, make smart choices, but how can you know what a smart choice is until like 10 years later?
I know.
See, and if I'd kept all of the publishing and not given away a single percentage point of it, maybe they wouldn't have worked that hard to get those things.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing. That's why I don't really think about that stuff that much. I'm not proud of that. I'm very thankful that it's gone as well as it has in that regard. But it's, to me, it's like all I care about is that feeling of energy and excitement, and all the work and all those things are all feeding into continuing that, like making that continue to exist.
So how much riffs, lyrics, how many songs do you have in the Andrew WK vault?
Well, now a whole bunch.
And when will we hear it?
Well, again, like this year, now we're sort of still at the beginning of the year. I said, okay, this is the year 2015. Well, but again, kind of already saying that, knowing like, well, maybe it won't happen. Who knows what's, for some reason, things shifted to me. And I'm not, again, proud of this. I don't know if this is a good way to do things. I used to think it was a bad way, but I can't, I can't look back on the last 5 years and complain in any regard. I used to think, you know, like, okay, well, this is the year I'm going to plan it out. But now I just think people are going to come to us with these opportunities. And how could I say no? Like getting to host a kid's game show where we blow up school buses.
That was great.
And I never would have dreamed. I would have never, you know, it would never even have occurred to me to have the nerve to think up that idea to say that's something I want to do. That's the excitement of it. I mean, it keeps me entertained. And I think as an entertainer, I have to be entertained. It's hard to entertain people when you're not entertained by your own existence. You know what I mean? So it keeps me very excited about all the things. And it makes me that much more excited when I do get to play a show after maybe doing a week of filming a TV thing or something. Like it all feeds into itself. It's all related. It's all under the umbrella of show business one way or another. It's not like I'm doing, you know, science on one day and then you know, something unrelated otherwise.
Do you have like a set team just for TV and films and stuff, and do you see like an acting coach or a hosting coach or anything like that?
No, and probably should, because I'm not a very good actor. I've gone on some auditions for things that I admit I wasn't very excited about, so I probably didn't take it very seriously. And they basically said, I said, I didn't even know why I was getting asked to do it. I by the last one was for a CBS pilot. I don't think any of the shows have even been made that I auditioned for. It's so hard to get a show into the process. But CBS does a lot of casting, and I would go in, and someone was recommending me, which I appreciated because people would kill to get those auditions. I said, I feel bad, like I'm wasting your time. I don't know how to act. They said, well, yeah, I can tell. You should probably take some acting classes. And just felt very depressed in one way. But at the same time, I was like, you know, someone that can do this, that wants to do this, should get this. When someone wants Andrew WK, that I can do. You know, being able to play a character, that's very hard for me.
What about with the Ramones songs? Like, was there any, did you feel like, well, your voice is so different from Joey. Oh, yeah. Like, was there any hesitation, or were you just like, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do my best.
It was a huge hesitation out for the fear of not doing it justice. So that was my biggest hesitation, that I wouldn't be able to physically sing them. Two, people would be offended or insulted somehow, that it would be a disgrace to the legacy or to that music. And maybe even more than that, that I was getting involved in something that somehow wouldn't take advantage of what I had to offer, and maybe again, sort of somehow tarnish the whole thing. And I was very afraid of people being mad about it, like the very diehard Ramones fans. But then at the same time, I really liked the Ramones, so I could consider myself a fan in that way. And I didn't feel bad about the idea of someone singing the songs. And after all, it's Marky Ramone asking me to do it. So I felt most obligated to that when he asked you to do anything within reason, you should do it.
Yeah.
So that's what I focused on. And I said, I'm going to find the will and the way and the means and the energy to somehow sing these songs, because they're very challenging. As easy as they seem, it's quite challenging, especially when you do 36, 37 songs in an hour. It's, you know, there's no stops. There's no water. You don't take a break for even 5 seconds. It's very intense. But I just sang on my way, and he didn't want me to try to copy. You can't. There's no physical way to sing like Joey Ramone. No one else could do that. I've heard people impersonate him, but I couldn't do that. I thought that would be disrespectful of anything. The songs are so good.
Yeah.
There's never been better rock music written. And as long as you just sing them with that in mind, they do the work for you.
Totally. And I think it's cool, because you're basically exposing a lot of that catalog to people who would never know about it. And that's another thing that old school fans should realize and appreciate. I just did some Josta shows opening for the Misfits, and I noticed on my like social media there was some negativity about this version of the Misfits.
Right.
But then when you go to the show, like we played Irving Plaza, it was packed, and people were going crazy for the Misfits in their current incarnation. It just shows that that's the power of the music. People want to hear those songs live. It doesn't necessarily even matter who from what lineup is doing it.
Well, that's the thing. We're obviously not trying to compete. You can't compete with the original lineup, with any of the original Ramones. Having Marky there and him wanting these songs to be played live was all the convincing that I needed. And again, it's made me a better singer. It's made me a better performer. Singing with him made me a better person, and that I never would have expected.
How many people cheer or yell for Party Hard?
People have said that. We play a recording of it like after the
we finished
the show. He asked, actually. He was very gracious. He said, do you want to play any of your songs? And I said, no, thank you.
I like how you threw in the accent in just a little bit. Just, do you want to play any of your songs?
Well, we've spent a lot of time together now, and we have shows coming up. And you know, he's an incredible person. Being around him, you know, even beyond his experience as a Ramon, he's an amazing drummer and individual. And I feel very lucky that I just get to inhabit space with masters like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like lifelong.
Taking the energy. Master.
Exactly.
Taking the vibes and learn.
Just observe him, you know?
Do you ever want to just do something completely left of center and a different style of music? Like, do you ever want to just like sing on a thrash album or a death metal album or something?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been thinking about things like that pretty much since I began. And the way not like I had to talk myself out of it, but I had this feeling of I'll never be able to do it as well as the people that are already doing it. Doesn't mean you can't do it out of the love for it. But I felt like whatever energy I have is supposed to be put towards this thing that I'm supposed to do. I was so conflicted, like out of high school when I was playing drums in basically like a grindcore band, you know, mostly blast beats. And there was this impulse I had that I wasn't supposed to be doing that. And the most painful part about giving it up to some degree, obviously I could still listen to that music and play whenever I wanted, but that I was supposed to focus on this major key, cheerful party music. The most painful part was feeling like I'm never going to get to be part of that world. Those people are going to despise me. All these bands that I love, I'll never get to meet them. I'll never get to play a show with them. And of course, like the most bizarre thing was that I've pretty much met every single person I ever idolized from that world in the most roundabout way. And it almost seems like the only way I did get to meet them is because I'm not playing that style.
Right.
So weird.
Isn't that crazy?
It's very weird. Very weird.
I once had an elder statesman say to me, stop jumping over dollars to get dimes.
Whoa.
And I really thought about that because I was like wanting to help out all these bands and put them out on my label. And really what I was doing was it was eating up so much of my time where I could have been writing my own hit song.
Yes.
Or producing a bigger artist. I was trying to like break the next artist, and I had to just stop. I had to walk away and just stop my label. What's been the best advice that you've been giving from you know, someone from the music industry?
From the music industry, well, a lot of great advice that for whatever reason, I just would do the exact opposite of whatever they said. And it wasn't out of disrespect. It just seemed like they would say, don't ever trust anyone at your label. So I would be like very trusting in the label. They say, never take advice from someone that doesn't understand you. So I would always like listen to people that I didn't feel like understood where I was coming from. Just all kinds of convoluted mindsets. I've always been really into that sort of trying to tap into some deeper instinct. Again, like that one that isn't logical.
Right.
Trying to listen to that thing that doesn't make any sense and having that blind faith in it. It's just it's worked for me. But as far as like good advice, well, Marky, you know, he's given me a lot of incredible advice. Just little things he said, like when I was very afraid of, you know, people being mad that I was singing these Ramones songs, he said, you know, those people are your friends. You know, they want you to do well on the stage. They're not there to see you do a bad job. And I had never thought of it that way. I always thought like that they're the enemy and they're there to see me fail and they feel ill will towards me. And it occurred to me that maybe it's the exact opposite. That changed everything. That really changed my view of life that people could have, people that you don't even know, maybe not even at a show, but just walking down the street, could have, that could care about you for no reason other than you're a human. You know?
Yeah.
That was a pretty mind-blowing revelation these last 2 years.
What label will the next Andrew WK record be on?
Who knows? That's a good question. It's great to be in a position to have that kind of flexibility. I mean, and now you can, you know, I've released things sort of through, not my own label, but a long story, but a label that was sort of set up by people I work with. And that was good because it gave us a lot of instantaneous control. You didn't have to go through any kinds of approval processes with anything, especially the setup. You could just say, here's what it's going to be and let's get it released. But I would like to have, you know, the music available. That's the main thing, that it's out there. If you can work with a team that believes in it, why not? You know, we had the last thing, they put out the, see, again, like one of my favorite record labels ever was Century Media.
Yeah.
And really liked, especially the black metal that they put out. And never, again, when I was playing drums in that sort of grindcore band, that would have been my dream label to be on, you know, that or Earache. And never in a million years would I imagine that they would end up releasing this 10th anniversary edition of my first album on Century Media. I mean, yeah. It was crazy. So maybe, you know, we talked to them, but whoever wants to release it that has that kind of belief in it, that's all you need. You need people that care about it. You could be on the biggest label in the world, and if they don't care about it, then nothing's going
to
happen.
But aren't you in a position, though, where you can just do a tour and you don't really even need to have a record out?
Yeah, and again, that doesn't make any sense. It's very bizarre to me. We got invited to Download Festival this year for the first time ever. I've been wanting to play that festival since we started, since we had our first album or second album. And now, you know, 15 years later, without anything in my mind, like as far as a traditional music career is going, we're not doing anything. I'm just like existing. And now we get invited. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But I don't take it for granted. I hope that's always clear.
No, that means the catalog is strong.
I guess so. I guess so. I can't believe it.
Or at least the brand itself. Is it something important for young artists to try to create a brand like similar to you or some of these other people who have had success in other mediums other than just music?
Only if you like it. Only if you're compelled to do it, you know. That's what I always liked. The things that I always was excited about and still am were usually driven by some kind of this feeling of like a phenomenon, like there's a whole world within a world within a world, and that you could get into this thing as a fan or like relate to it in some way, and it could you could go in as deep as you wanted and it would never end. Like it wasn't just an album, it wasn't just a song, it was like life. And I wanted, of course, to be able to work on something that was big enough for me that I could dedicate myself to this cause that allowed it to be that big for me. Like it could be my whole life, you know? So it depends. I've met so many people, great, great, great musicians, great entertainers, people that work in the business who really think of it as an isolated project and it's, or like work, like a job.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of other interests that don't have anything to do with it. And it's important to them that they have their work, they have, you know, their life. Like I need to have a life. I wanted to make my life the whole thing. Like the whole thing was life.
But
I don't
nobody
have
knows
other
anything about your life. Nobody knows anything about you.
This is
like,
it.
Are you some amazing painter? Like, what do you do in your spare time?
Let's see, if I was going to make a painting, I would never want to just make a painting just for me. It would have to be like an album cover or a t-shirt design or a backdrop, or it has to play into this. Because otherwise it feels like I'm wasting time.
Do you have pets?
I've had pets before, but I currently have no pets. I'm not happy about that. I mean, I guess bugs. I have like probably some bacteria and small micro-sized bugs on my body right now. I haven't bathed in a couple of days. So they count as pets, I think, in a way.
But
no dog, no cat. Because like, too much traveling.
And where is home base?
Well, it's funny you asked that because I actually very recently decided to live in hotels. And this is something I had, well, certainly done before on tour. Before getting my own house again after many years to have a home base. And I didn't like it as much. I realized that actually it was the same price or cheaper to stay in a hotel every night than to pay rent, at least in New York City.
Yeah.
The price I can pay in a hotel like this hotel is still less than the rent. And then you have all these nice amenities. Someone cleans the room for you. There's a little small refrigerator in there, a nice shower. They clean it up. I always liked hotels. I like traveling and I like hotels.
It's like people would literally kill to have your life. You realize that?
Well, I would kill too, and I think I did kill a version of myself in order to get it, and that's the sacrifice that.
Yeah, what do you think about all those conspiracy theories that are about that are out there about you?
About me? Oh, well, I obviously don't take them seriously. I was more, you know, I don't know that they're even worth going into that much. I don't encourage people to give them any attention, but if you have already or something. Earlier on, I was very angry about them, and I think that I, in my efforts to silence them and fight back, I made things much worse.
Yeah, like you brought light to them.
Exactly. So,
but I see you now, and you're still the same guy. You haven't aged one.
Well, neither have you. So you look. You look.
You are too kind.
No, you know that you've heard that before. I'm sure.
Well, you look as young or younger. So like that whole thing, like that you're not you, because there's a similar rumor about Paul McCartney.
Right, exactly. This is just like classic stuff.
Yeah, that he's not himself. That I still want to believe, but now when you walked in and I saw you, I was like, well, you're still you. I was kind of like...
Yeah, exactly. Maybe like, you never met Paul McCartney. I have never met him, so we can't verify that. We have met each other, so that's proof right there. You can vouch for me.
But you believe in like extraterrestrial things and supernatural stuff or no?
What, like the possibility of aliens?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for sure.
And supernatural ghosts and things like that.
I believe in the possibility of it. Yeah, I haven't had... Well, actually, I've had haunting experiences where things just felt very weird. I have two good ones. And maybe you stayed at this place. The Marlboro Hotel in Winnipeg.
I've heard of it.
Okay. You know, that's a great town. There's good venues there.
Love Winnipeg.
Yeah. It's you know, it's legendary. And it's old. It's old. There was a lot of... I don't know if it was mining or something, but there was some like intense inhabitants crossing through there. And there's a hotel that's like the oldest hotel there called the Marlboro Hotel. And I was on a tour where actually we set out, the nature of the tour was to kind of go into an intense experience. Like we kind of set our minds, like we want to have a crazy adventure without really trying to do something, just sort of let's let things get weird. And, you know, be careful what you wish for because, that one was quite subtle in that things just felt very off. There was like a haze, like when you can't wake up and you just, you know that feeling when you just, like you want to just get some fresh air or splash cold water on your face. We were in this hotel room and I couldn't shake that bleary feeling to the degree where we had to leave. I said, it must be something like about this room or it's stuffy in here. That's what it never occurred to me. And as we were leaving, my friend Alistair X, who was on tour with me, he said, hey, maybe the place is haunted. And he was just sort of joking. I don't think he was investigating that or taking it too seriously. We went and checked into a very nice, beautiful, brand new Holiday Inn and mentioned just in passing to the guy at the front desk, like, oh, yeah, we just were at the Marlboro Hotel. It was not a very nice place. He's like, oh, well, it's very, you know, famous for being haunted. Is that why you stayed there? And then he pulled out all this information. It was like a tourist attraction. So that was the first time I thought, wow, I guess those feelings... There's something to that. Maybe it was a coincidence. My second experience, which was very recent, was in Chicago at a recently reopened, very old venue called Thalia Hall. We had just played there on New Year's Eve. And as we were packing up, I heard a baby crying very clear, you know, in the dress room, which is two sub basements below. I thought, oh, I guess someone in the staff has a kid here. But it was really late. It was, you know, 3 a.m. almost at that point. Who would bring a baby, I guess, or maybe there's someone lives, but that was, it was in a basement, but it was just so obviously a baby crying. They didn't really think much of it. Then on the way out, I was sort of asking like, whose baby was that? And there was no baby. No one had any baby.
Wow.
So and they said they found, then they brought up all this stuff. They said, oh, well, we've had quite a few haunting experiences here recently. When we were renovating the place, we found a lot of dead, you know, remains in the basement and things like that. So, you know, I believe in possibility of all that kind of stuff. Why not?
But you don't partake in any, like, hallucinogens or any hard drugs or booze or anything, right?
No, I have.
You have?
Yeah, I have.
But you weren't at that time.
What, that night? No,
yeah.
not when that happened.
See, because some religions believe, like, if you were to get really messed up, inebriated on anything, that a spirit could enter your mind's eye and then, you know, act out their earthly desires with your body as their vessel.
So wait, are you saying that might explain what's been going on to me in my life for the last 15 years?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying, I read some of the conspiracy theories and I was like, that's the only one that I thought might have been able to happen, or you were abducted or something. But I don't even really believe in a lot of that. I like to just for fun, and it's fun, it's fodder for the podcast.
It's fun to think about.
Right, and people like to listen to stories like this. But I was thinking, you know, you wouldn't really... I don't see you as one of those people that would wake up like in jail, like, what did I do? What happened? And they're like, dude, you threw somebody off a building or something. I don't know you that well, but I'm just saying, like,
I've never thrown anyone off anything.
But you know that happens. People wake up every
blackouts,
day.
Yeah.
And they go, do you remember what you were doing? But you don't party like that. Like,
I've had blackout experiences. Yeah. It really is nightmarish. There's no real other experience I've had like that. I've had some drug experiences that were like that too, where I never like woke up. I never had completely gone to sleep, but there was just this unbelievable weight that something horrible had happened. And I even asked my friend who went through the experience with me, I said, did we kill somebody? Like, what happened? It took me about 2 hours to realize that nothing had happened. We had never left the room, but my body or my mind, you know, your soul, whatever, felt like it had gone through hell, like you had done something and nothing had happened at all. I'm glad to experience that sensation that way versus actually having done something bad, but I think anyone's capable of it. Maybe it's like a way to test your own capacity for evil.
What about partying as a whole though? Like when people ask you, like, because you're the king of partying, your whole brand, your persona, everything is about partying, but you're not really like, you don't, you're not meaning like literally like slam booze all day and smoke weed all day. You're talking about balance and like realistic partying, right?
Well, I'm talking about partying however you want to party, really. I never liked people telling me how to party. That was really actually a big motivation early on coming out of high school. Everyone had their rules about what was cool and what you had to do to be cool, and partying was this and that. I thought, what if partying is just having fun, just existing, actually.
Yeah.
What if even not partying can count as partying? How far out can we take this concept? So that was my thing. Is like, this is about a feeling of excitement about not being dead. But even that, like, for all we know, being dead could be the most exciting thing of all.
Right.
So it's trying.
But we don't want to push that.
No.
We don't want
to teach their own.
I think about you every time I make a smoothie.
Oh, wow.
Because I do this thing where I freeze a banana.
Okay.
And I don't know if this was on your Twitter, which you're one of the best people to follow on Twitter. But I freeze a banana, and then, like, I go to the store, and I get these bananas that are, like, older.
Yeah,
and they're
real,
like,
ripe.
Yeah, and they're, like, 30 cents for, like, 30
of
them.
You got fruit flies on them.
And they're just disgusting. And I go home, and I put them in my freezer. And so I take the frozen banana out. I run it under hot water so that the peel comes right off.
Wow.
And then I break it in half, and I put it in the blender. And someday, days I'll say, what would Andrew WK do? And so some days I'll take like a huge thing of spinach and I just slam the spinach into the blender, and then I'll take like something natural and nice, like a sweetener, like stevia.
Oh wow, okay.
Which is better for you than sugar, I heard.
I've heard that too.
And then I'll do like a vegan scoop of like Vega protein, like pea protein. Have you heard about pea protein?
I've
you're looking pretty jacked. Like, what's your workout routine?
My brother's vegan. I was vegan in high school for a little while. I love smoothies. I mean, and this frozen banana, I've done frozen bananas, but it's so funny because the times I tried, it was really hard to get the peel off. So this hot water
is the trick.
It sheds the peel. It's like when you barbecue meat and it slides right off the bone. It's that reversed.
Exactly. I need to do like a YouTube like life hack. I know you got to go. I know you got to go get your passport.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry for keeping you.
No.
Last question is, so when you're getting these passports, because you're going on tour in Europe.
I'm going to Japan with Mark Yermone. It was very Punk Spring Festival. We were supposed to play that, my band and I were supposed to play that when the tsunami hit.
Right.
And literally days away from it, it got canceled, of course. Very sad, very tragic. It's very exciting now to be asked back and with Marky. So that just got booked last minute. I mean, we're 3 weeks out, not even, 2 weeks out. And have to get this passport stuff done very fast. I had to get more pages added to my passport.
And then download?
Download, and there's, you know, I'm playing Chicago on Friday, and Phoenix the next day, and just shows, you know, It's okay. Just a mix. It's just a party. It's a blend.
And what's the plan for the rest of the year? More columns, more TV, hopefully an album.
I mean, who knows? It's a mystery. No one knows, especially me. So we'll just have to see. But, the party spirit will continue, and I will follow it wherever it compels me to go.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Andrew. It's great to see you.
It's a real privilege.
You're
to
a
be
good man.
Right back at you, and thank you for all your kindness over so many years.
My pleasure, man. There he is, everybody. Andrew WK. Talk about needing a part two, man. We didn't even really scratch the surface on all the stuff I wanted to ask him, but I'm glad he addressed some of the controversy. You know, there's all these conspiracy theories out there, and I was thinking about it. I'm like, and I've been held up, behind the scenes by red tape, when you're signed into one deal and you want to put out music, but the record label has to protect their investment. Like it happened with the Kingdom of Sorrow first album. That record was recorded in like 05 or something, and it didn't even come out till 08 because I was in a Hatebreed deal with Roadrunner. Now, I think later on, after the record came out on Relapse and sold like, 45,000 copies or whatever it was, people at Roadrunner were like, oh, wow, maybe we should have released that record. But, stuff happens and, you get held up with your music and what you want to do. And that's just the business. And a lot of times you can't talk about it in the public or in the press or in interviews. And so then people think you're hiding something and then they come up with conspiracy theories. So I think that's probably maybe a similar type of thing happened with Andrew WK. I don't know. But, reading up on some of these crazy conspiracy theories that people had about him, it's really interesting stuff. And I'd love to have him back on and just talk about what's going to happen in the future and what the, songs he's writing are like now, like lyrically, and talk more about the motivational speaking stuff, because I think that's a great thing that he's doing, going to schools. And so people can learn. I mean, the guy, like I said, in the interview, he's 2 years younger than me. He looks in great shape, not a wrinkle on his face, and the future is bright for that dude. So I want to thank Andrew for coming on the show, making time for me. Definitely need to make more time for the next part two. Hopefully you guys liked the episode. And before we go, I want to play some music from Qwello.com, which make sure when you sign up for Qwello, make sure you use my link. Don't forget, Qwello.com/VIP/JamieJosta. We're going to hear some live Billy Idol in just a bit, but real quick, I got two or three more plugs I got to do. I can't forget about Ink and Iron Fest. I was talking about that Killswitch Engage episode earlier with Adam D, and that episode did so well. Thank you everybody who listened to that episode, but I'm not sure if I plugged that we are playing together Killswitch Engage and Hatebreed June 13th in Long Beach, California. So make sure you check out Ink and Iron Festival. That's Killswitch Engage, Hatebreed, Dillinger Escape Plan, a bunch of other bands. It's our only California show we have booked right now in all of 2015. So if you want to see us out west, do not miss that show, people, okay? And then we'll be flying to Canada to do Amnesia Rock Fest, which is going to be just incredible. I'm really looking forward to that show. Amnesia Rock Fest, that is June 20th. Now, let's hear some live Billy Idol. This is Rebel Yell.
set you free. I want you to be free. I want to set us free.
All right, that was Billy Idol with Rebel Yell off, I think it's Live in Superdrive, right? You can check that out on Quello.com/VIP/Jamie Josta. That's it for now, everybody. I will be back this Thursday, hopefully with a Twitter question, Gmail, Facebook, fan shout out episodes. If all goes well, I will try to get that done. I was looking through all the questions and there's lots and lots of stuff, but if you still want to try to get one answered, go to my fan bridge. Or just tweet me and I'll try to get that in the fan episode. Also, thank you to everybody who went to martyrstore.net and used the new coupon code. It's JASTA2015. That's JASTA2015. Martyrstore.net is where you can get the coffee, death metal, and push-up shirts. Also got those JASTA amps in your face shirts back in stock. Thank you to everybody who got one. I will try to sign more 8x10s and give out stickers and CDs in the orders. I just was not around the last, like, whatever, 10 days. I was not able to do that. So if you did order one and you didn't get one, I am sorry, but I will get it in the future order. So we got some new Hateware shirts over there as well. Follow Hateware on Twitter. I am done with all the plugs. Thank you for listening through all this stuff. I appreciate it. I will be back Thursday with a new episode. I will talk to you then.